Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
My Woo! Man, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing great, Dan. How are you?
Doing well. Welcome back to another episode of the Inside Lacrosse D3 Podcast. We are getting into the home stretch here. We're on the other side of bracket reveal. We are on the other side of the regular season. We are on the other side of conference playoffs. And, man, we have a ton to talk about. But before we get into it, everybody's here for one thing.
Oh, that's why they tune in. The weekly swarm update.
You got it.
Yep. The boys had a great weekend. Yep. Came out strong. Had a nice little match against Hereford to set ourselves up well for our Sunday slate. Won that one pretty handedly, like 9-1. All the boys were buzzing good. And then Sunday, we had to win this one to stay in it for the playoffs and then to kick the other team out of the playoffs. And it was a tight one, let me tell you. It was back and forth, tied up the whole game. Our faceoff guy gets a stinger from a fast break, makes it 7-6. And you know what Coach Caleb does in crunch time.
Oh, boy.
We zoned it up hard.
Yeah.
Zoned it up hard. They had no shots. They couldn't get anything going. Shut them down. Final score, 7-6. The Swarm Boom. Is moving on. We win this weekend, and we're in the big dance.
You win and you go?
Win and you're in.
You're dancing.
Lose and you're out.
Punch your ticket.
Punching our ticket this weekend,
wow.
Sunday. It's
wow.
going to be – it's up in your neck of the woods, too. If you're free, you should stop on by.
I will not be.
Yeah.
I'll be busy.
That's fair. There'll be games on.
But – that is quite exciting. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you had the, we really enjoy this group. We want to keep it together as long as possible. We understand that the end of the year, inevitably, there's going to be different things that happen. This group is likely to never be together as a whole entire group again. We just want to keep it going as long as possible. Have you had that talk yet with the boys?
Not yet, because we roll immediately into our summer schedule from the spring
gotcha.
Into June.
So that would be more of like an invitation for people to leave your team.
Exactly, yes. We've been looking at the signups. We do have some of our big key players coming back. So we're pretty pumped about that.
Good.
But we have a pretty good core group of kids on the team there.
There
so
you go.
Really loving what we're working with. But hey, if you're in the Baltimore area and a 12-year-old listening, feel free to come on out to the Swarm.
We'd I bet there's a lot of you. Them. I you bet we have so? A ton of 12-year-olds.
Okay, all right, yeah, come on down. We'd love to have you.
All right. Well, with all that,
mm-hmm.
You know what time it is.
Oh, it's time to get into the big boy lacrosse.
We got a loaded episode here. We've got a full weekend review of conference playoffs. We have a look ahead at our NCAA reveal or
NCAA bracket reveal.
There we go.
Yep.
We've got some reactions to it. We're not too far removed from it. We're actually less than 24 hours still
yep.
away from
it's very
when we
fresh.
Officially got it.
I'm still pretty heated about my York boys, but we'll get there.
I'm excited to get you there in a million ways. Man. What a weekend. What a world. It's been an awesome season. It's like kind of bittersweet. It's obviously exciting to get to this point in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get here, it means you only have so much time left, you know? So,
yep.
Gosh.
We've narrowed down the field now to, what, 38? 38 yep. teams left remaining. We have some seasons done, some teams that missed the cut that maybe we feel shouldn't have, which we're going to get into a little bit. But it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get into all of that, Dan, we have to touch on these conference championships.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You ready to dive into it?
Conference championships and statistical players of the week.
Yes.
Our new minted favorite segment of the year.
Yes, yes. That's been getting a
season?
Lot of love, and we have some big winners this week. So congrats to them, and can't wait to get to them. But you ready to dive in?
I am, and I am officially ready to hand it to you and let you take us down a path wherever you want to go, because as you know, your boy is ready to roll, nice and prepared. Got my notebook here handy. Lots of game notes from the last week.
Mm.
Lots of bracket. I tried to do my very best in the last, I'll say, 13 days.
Okay. You've. I mean,
a little
that
bit
notebook
more.
You
it's actually
kind,
probably a little
it's
bit
kind
more.
Of like gold.
Oh, the notebook is around. The notebook is much longer than a 13-day span here.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that I've been doing my very best to try and get into the eyes of the committee and think through the landscape through NCAA, like bracketology. So I did a few of those, I think, since the last time that we talked, even. A lot going on here. Excited to chat it all up with you.
Yeah. So we'll jump right in. First one that's been on my mind, I told the listeners last week that it was going to be a good one, and turned out It wasn't as good as I was hoping.
I want to hear that dirty little mouth of yours say it.
Yeah, it was bad. Say Salisbury it. 9.
Say their defense is good.
CNU 4. we were texting about this one. And
say it.
Do it.
Do it.
Salisbury's defense is good. It's good. Still nervous about their goalie situation, of course. I think that can be hit or miss if I have to be nitpicky, which I do. It's my job. But, yeah, yes. Salisbury just proved to us this weekend that they can win in a multitude of ways. They have all the guys on offense, but when that offense isn't clicking, they can button it down and play lights out D, and that's what they showed in this game.
Well, man, there's definitely times in this game where the offense is not clicking. You know, they get to 9 goals. I bet you if before the game you had told CNU they're going to hold Salisbury to 9, they are not assuming they're losing by anything more than 1.
They wouldn't assume they lose at all. Yeah. You got Andrew Cook on the other side of the ball. You know, you would assume you're at least getting double digits out.
And I think he's awesome, but Salisbury's got his number, man.
They know what they're doing with him. Yeah. It's classic Jim Berkman, you know. You got to take care.
You got to start calling him Coach Berkman, man. That bothers me so much. I let you get away with it 1 week here.
Okay.
But
it's classic Coach Berkman. You know what he takes care of his home schedule, and when he's in conference, he takes care of business.
Why do you even do that? Why is that? You don't do that with any other coach.
Do I?
No.
Oh, I guess I never noticed that.
You maybe do it every time you ever talk about him. You use his first name.
Maybe there's just like so much,
but no other coach.
Behind him. Like, yeah. Which still, I mean,
you use it in like a prestigious way.
Yeah. It's more of like I have so much respect for him, and he never earned that coach title for me because he didn't send me to Salisbury.
This is gonna be an epic episode.
Already starting up hot out of the gate. But Dan. Dan, what were your kind of takeaways from this besides Salisbury's stellar performance on defense?
Yeah, I mean the defense was awesome, and that's even after the Ballard injury.
Yes, gotta you know talk about that.
A little scary. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see like a little. It's hard to call it non-contact because there's like people around, mm-hmm. but I don't know that there was like
a clear cut incident that made the whole thing happen.
Correct, and immediately when he goes down. It's actually quite, like, it's kind of perplexing. Like, he's very clearly hurt, but he's also, like, ultra-composed. He just, like, kind of turns to the ref and just, like, waves him down, and he's like, yeah, something ain't right here. Yeah, like, we're going to need to slow this bad boy down. If you could blow the whistle and potentially send a trainer over, I would love that.
That would
like,
be cool.
He's, like, ultra-composed.
Really appreciate it.
Anyways, I don't know if that's a sign that perhaps it's not as bad as it seemed. And, you know, like, they all had a lead, and you didn't really need to totally risk throwing them back into the fire. Or if it was like, yeah, this is bad news, and I need some sort of assistance here quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hopefully it is the latter, or hopefully it's the former, of course, and that, you know, he's going to be back playing this weekend.
Of course.
But, you know, you never know with stuff like that. So.
And just the way that they play teams, I think it would be a really it would be a big move for him. And what you saw there after that injury was Jackson Woodward, who has played pole in his career, but a little bit earlier in his career, and then he made the switch over to short stick just based on, you know, depth and where they needed him most. Mm-hmm. And he picks up a pole and pretty seamlessly steps in to help them and, you know, fills the gap there. But it'll be interesting to see how that wrinkle effects impacts the short stick depth.
Yeah.
And then, thank you. And then obviously as well, like even with a short stick or even with a pole, and even if he is, you know, playing extremely well with a pole, his length isn't Thomas Ballard's, right? Like it's a different look. It's a different, you know, totally different player filling the gap. So, be interesting to see how that kind of manifests itself going forward. And I mean, I don't want to go totally into it, but I think you'd want some length when you're likely to see an Amherst team that's pretty good on offense and can sling the ball around.
That's a really good point, yeah, and we'll definitely get into that. Anything else on this game before we move on to the NCAC championship with Kenyon and Denison?
Yes, because so later, this is a little bit of a tease for later. But we have our statistical player of the weekend, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
in that, we typically try and feature some teams that don't necessarily get as much shine as some of the other teams,
of
a.k.a.
course.
Like a Salisbury, who gets at least 33 mentions an episode. But if that wasn't the case and we were just doing it straight based on statistical players of the week, we'd be talking about John DeFazio, who had 7 calls turnovers in the game and 8 ground balls to take tournament MVP. And, gosh, he was just a menace. Like,
all over the field.
Yeah, and there's a play specifically along the far sideline that I'm thinking of where, like, not only does he put the ball on the ground, but then it's a perfect goose and a simple, easy ground ball. And it's like he's making these, like, highly skilled plays look really easy against a very good team.
Yes.
Like, he was excellent on that day.
I think that's one thing to point out. It's like, CNU's no joke. Like, they came out here and did some pretty good stuff against a pretty dominant team that we've seen beat some good teams this year. So,
not only
impressive by the calls.
Not only that, but, like, which was more dominant, this one or the first game they played them?
I mean, the first – the different ways of dominating in both games, which for Salisbury is
– the correct really answer good. Is who cares. They were both full-on dominations.
both took it to them handedly both times.
So a little bit of a trick question there, and I'm sorry to have done that to you.
Hey, it's okay.
But it seemed necessary.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I don't need to guess if the goal is too much, though. Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely interesting one. And in terms of NCAA bracketology, a.k.a. bracket that's already been announced, this game meant nothing besides seeding, really.
Exactly, yep. We saw Salisbury get that top seed host spot with the wind, and CNU's down to the second spot on that side of the bracket.
They would have just done the old swapsy-daisies.
Yep, the old switcheroony right there. Yeah. So pretty good stuff there. Let's keep this train moving to Denison Kenyon, which we saw a 14-13 thriller, and Denison edging them out just slightly, but both of these teams do make the tournament. Dan, key takeaways from this, what'd you think here?
So shout out, first of all, to Tufts and RIT, who in the noon slate handled business so eloquently that both games were 11-1 at halftime.
Didn't really even need to turn them on.
Which was not something in the moment that I was super complaining about, because I was able to easily just switch on over to the 1 o'clock games.
Yep.
Which leads me to my next point, which is shout out to Salisbury and Dickinson for making those pretty much inevitable pretty early and at least into the CNU. Salisbury's tight at the half, but like the way that it was tight was based on, like, it felt like nervous shooting pipes, a lot of random different things. Like, I was pretty skeptical.
Yep.
So then, like, you know, into the third and into the fourth, obviously that game gets, you know, becomes somewhat inevitable. Same with Dickinson, which I shout those two out because that meant that I was able to shift gears to Kenyon Denison, which was electric.
All focused on this.
This game was so D3, man. It was awesome. Like, the call, the announcers were electric.
They were so much fun.
The microphones were turned up way too loud, and it was awesome. All of it was just – it was an awesome game. Kenyon came back to beat Denison in the first one. Denison now comes back to beat Kenyon in the second round. And this one's for the title in an AQ. And then I think Kenyon, if they come out and get dominated, like if Denison rolls Kenyon, I think RPI is in the tournament.
Yeah.
Kenyon played themselves, like the resume, like there's a million different things that were going for them too, right? Like all of their resume is very strong, only one loss, so on and so forth. I think had they shown up there and gotten blown out, they don't make it.
Yeah.
Even if it's, like, I don't know.
I think that's a
certain,
good point.
Certainly isn't a criteria on the NCAA website or a criteria listed from the NCAA, but when it came down to everything being so close and you're nitpicking and you're splitting hairs and things like that, if one of those hairs to split was, they just got blown out today. I think it would have been tough to take them.
Easy deciding factor right there. But the fact that they stuck in it.
Not only stuck in it, they came out there up 10-3 at the half.
Yeah.
They're dominating. They're taking it to them. Winning face-offs, playing fast, hitting in transition, like doing all the things that, like,
that when they play that
eye-catching things, you know,
dangerous.
It's like.
And they're a dangerous team.
And they can play make it take it at the X at times when – And yeah, so anyways, I think that was an interesting wrinkle to it. But an otherwise electric game. Two players to shout out here from the Denison side, Luke Fisher and Ethan Tyak, who I'm going to spend more time on the
ladder.
Who I'm going to spend more time on the ladder. His ability to create in that game, I thought, made all the difference. He's able to go at his pole. He attacks his matchup, generates plenty of attention, and then is able to dish it. And Luke Fisher, I think, does the same thing, right? And between the two of them, they're able to just pick which matchup they like the best and kind of go at it. And Ethan Tyak definitely was up to the challenge of going at his guy and does it when it matters most. So does it to tie the game and then does it again to take the lead. Both instances finding Quinn O'Donnell for finishes. So
there we go.
Interesting stuff there. You know, team needs him most. He's been around for a while. Guy that, I mean, we've talked about at least a good amount in the last 2 years. And, yeah, they needed him most, and he came up big again for him. So that was pretty good there. And definitely for Denison, like, now you go from a spot of had you lost that game, which at 10-3 at the half, like, doesn't seem totally unrealistic.
Of course.
To hosting. So, like, man, quite the come up there in the last
jump
in that 12 hours, you know, like that was quite the glow up.
Quite the emotional swing for them, and we will see them hosting this weekend. So, great job by that. Another one, which was a nail biter this weekend, was the ODAC Championship, where we saw Washington and Lee go up against Lynchburg and barely edge out the Hornets 12-11. This was another electric one. I mean, just to get there, we saw a couple great games, and then, you know, back and forth battle here. Dan, what were your kind of key takeaways from the game here?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, we get to talk about them in a bit, but big-time revenge story here from WNO, who lost to both Hampton Sydney and Lynchburg in the regular season.
Yeah,
and
very impressive to go
beat both of them on the way back. Yep.
Yeah, take the ODAC, which...
And that Hampton Sydney game was a rout.
Mm.
And yeah, so they do that to secure the program's 12th ODAC title. And
do they have 12 now?
Yep, yeah. 12 ODAC titles. And yeah, Hillis Burns definitely is, you know, a guy that we'll be talking about at the end of the year when it comes time for All-American stuff. And, you know, continues to give his team a big bump and really is the driving factor of the offense that, you know, is now Poulet secured.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Now, for Lynchburg, I think, you know, I think Riley Mitchell still had a pretty strong showing. I'm not exactly sure of his stat line, but he still had a pretty strong showing. And I did love, you know, a lot of things that Hadley did there. So I think they're still in a pretty good position here come the tournament time for him. But definitely a tough loss for him, you know, going into NCAAs. They're not the high note that you really want to set yourself up on.
For Lynchburg.
Correct, yeah.
Yes, yes. Good point. What else about this one? Anything crazy?
Nothing too wild. I mean, it was an amazing game. So if you have the time, go back and check it out. You know, it was a classic ODAC sort of play. So feel free to check it out. But nothing too crazy from this one. If you want to keep this train rolling here.
Yeah, I don't think we need to spend a whole ton of time on this one. Both teams get in. Lynchburg, obviously, after losing this one, is accepted as a Pool C.
Yep.
They were probably one of the later picks for to totally take the bump, but was what I would have described as a safely on the bubble side of the bubble.
Still on the bubble, but safe side of the bubble.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah, they played a pretty tough schedule this year that I think led to help them out.
Correct.
Quite well.
And then, yeah, I mean, the other thing that you just got to mention quickly with WNL there is the other thing you got to mention there with Lynchburg was their success at the X. Michael Krause, 19 of 27 facing off, so did the work to kind of give Lynchburg the extra possessions that they would need, but the WNL defense, man, definitely showed up. Their range, length, athleticism, and they're super, super organized. So all of that kind of combines to just give them the edge in that one. And ultimately, I feel like that right there, the WNL organization, the WNL short stick defense, the WNL like composure in the clear and on ground balls, like all that type of stuff. Like they do really, really well, and it pays dividends for them in the form of an ODAC title.
There you go. Yep. Definitely a big win for them. Another big one that we saw was the MAC Commonwealth Championship, where we saw the classic York versus Stevenson matchup and York taking the cake 14-9. This one got fun at times. You know, I think York had a pretty dominant lead throughout most of it. But, you know, Stevenson definitely crept in, kept their name in it. And then at the end, you know, we saw the three-minute non-releasable penalty with the stick, which could have led to some sort of Stevenson comeback at the end. But York's defense shuts that down pretty quickly, gets the tide turned, and gets the win here. Stevenson now is done, and York's moving on to the NCAAs. Dan, any thoughts from this one?
Great intro there, buddy boy.
Oh, yeah.
Did you catch this one live? Were you live watch on this one?
Live watcher. Yeah.
What were you thinking when Stevenson goes up 2-0?
A little nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt comfortable somewhat though, just because it was such a dominant win beforehand. You know, I always kind of felt that York could come back, but that's the kind of game that Stevenson needed to make it if it was going to be a game. You know, get up early, make it sort of a game of runs where they could get back, fight back into it from time to time.
Yeah.
And we just didn't see that.
So in that exact moment, I had gotten a couple messages on the old IL Slack and replied saying, if I had to give keys to the game, the number one key that I would have given would have been York getting out to a quick start. I think before the game, obviously that would have been wrong, right? That didn't happen, and York ended up winning the game.
Still
fine.
Still worked out.
So, yeah, that would have been an incorrect key. But point being, I thought that after having taken a few in a row and, you know, being at home on a noon, like all these different things I thought were kind of working for them, that if had they been able to go up early, they may have been able to kind of ride that thing out. Mm-hmm. Similar to the championship game from last year, or 2 years ago, excuse me.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was wrong. So they go down 2-0 and then respond with a just massive run of it's either 6 goals or like 6 of the next 7. But, yeah, I mean, that really helped. They move some guys around at attack, which helps. And then Ethan Green, I thought, was just an absolute
He was kind of all over the field.
This was like, man, Ethan at his best is potentially the best short stick in the country, or the best long stick in the country. Mm. Ethan at his worst, or not even at his worst, but just like Ethan without the drive that he played with in this game is just fine. You know, like those are two different players. And gosh, when he was in this game, like championship game against a rival, like he freaking brought it and he was awesome.
Balling out for sure.
Yeah, and then part of that run definitely was Jacob Wilhelm, who I lead to that because Green was able to connect with him on transition for one. But, yeah, Jay Willie gets in and makes the most of it. And, you know, again, like championship game, you want to have your poise, composed guys out there that are going to, you know, be 1-6th and keep the ball in and out of their stick and just kind of make the plays that they're asked to without doing too much. And Jay Willie definitely did that. And then that's also how you ended up with Ames Clark at 0 points in the game and taking the conference championship MVP.
There you go.
So, yeah offensive player with no points, but takes MVP.
Yeah. Just goes to show, you know, how well they, you know, distribute the ball and use all 6 people, especially in offense.
And he was just able to, like, he was able to draw so much attention, create things, and, you know, played unselfishly, but it – all was for the benefit of the offense that, you know, had plenty of success.
That's like a classic Coach Childs thing too, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of true too.
Yeah, like most point scorers, biggest highlight guys, like, yeah, those guys get enough shine. It needs to be the guy that created everything, made everything happen. I like that.
And before we move on from Stevenson, got to give a lot of shout-out to Cam Ladig and Shane Ford, the lefties. Mm-hmm. Those guys can really, really play. Ladig does a ton for them, brings toughness to the table for them, you know, attacks matchups, gets to the middle, does a really good job. Great player there. He ends the day with a hat trick. Shane Ford also ends the day with 3 points, and his was on a goal and 2 assists. But, again, another guy that does a ton for that offense. And, you know, at times this year when things haven't gone their way, he's had no problem, like, I'll say shouldering the load, but that's not a good expression because shouldering the load implies like it's just become like, you know, the offense running through him. Mm-hmm. And that's not really what I mean. I mean more like backs against the wall. You need a play. Like the ball can go into his stick and he'll make something happen for you.
Yeah.
And so that definitely has been the case for him. And then a guy that I didn't really know too much about, who actually plays on the Stevenson hockey team as well. So he kind of comes in mid-season, I guess, and then starts to work himself into the mix there is Graham McCrory, and he's from north of the border.
Oh, okay. And, don't you know?
Yeah, and then and he had 2 goals in the game. So
right.
Definitely will be interesting to watch his progression through the next few years and to see if he is more involved next year and, you know, how potentially playing hockey at the same time at Stevenson impacts things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a good call out. Looking forward to see that. Let's move right along here into the Landmark Championship. Another thrilling game, absolutely encompassed, D3 lacrosse. It was Scranton, Elizabethtown, where we saw Scranton barely edge out the Blue Jays 13-12.
As predicted by the big dog on the D3 pod.
Better believe it. You better believe it.
So let's rewind to a week. You said that. How confident were you, and why did you say it?
I was fairly confident. I wouldn't say it was 100%. I was, like, locked in, but I was feeling fairly confident about it. And, you know, it was just because I've seen a lot of Scranton this year. You know, I thought that the last time they played Elizabethtown, it was a pretty close game where, you know, if you just get a couple saves or a couple things go, ball bounces your way once or twice, like, that's a different outcome right there. And it is hard to beat a team twice in one season. So, you know, those two factors combined, I really thought that, you know, this was kind of Scranton's time to shine. They've been right on the cusp, right on the precipice the past couple of years. Yeah, big word, I know. Yeah.
SAT word of the day from the D3 pod.
Word of the day, yes.
For you 12-year-olds that are definitely listening to
100% listening right now. Precipice means you're right on the cusp. But, yeah, so they've been right there. You know, and I think that everything kind of came together for them this year. You know, they got decent to pretty good goalie play, good face-offs, their poles are flying around, and, you know, just great drawn-up offense where, you know, they can attack you so many different ways from so many different people. So I think everything just kind of came together for them this year, and it was the year that they could do it, and they took home the ship. So great job for them.
Do you have a favorite Scranton player? Someone to shout out, perhaps?
See, that's the thing about Scranton too, is like there's just so many different guys and so many people that they roll through and use that I can't really like pick one in particular that really jumps out at me. I guess
I can.
Okay, all right, yeah. I was just gonna say the coaching staff, like the way that they do things and the way that they shuffle people around and get different guys in there. Like, I guess I got to start with that. But who's your one guy?
What Chris Crapanzanu.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Great last name.
He's
That's an A-tier last name.
He does so much for him. Yeah, he's definitely top of my list. He's probably my favorite Scranton player, not to pick favorites,
of course.
I would never ever
in
do.
In a million years.
But I feel like that's a pretty safe bet there. And he was the offensive player of the year in the league as well. And then I now that I've said that was a nice thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can I say something not nice now?
I guess you can say one thing.
I did not like that he dove across the crease with the game of the line.
That was an interesting
ball back. I do like that he's athletic enough to do it and was just like, you know what?
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Screw it. I'm going to do it.
I would love to know if it was planned. Like, if in the timeout they said, like, okay, you're going to get doubled, the goalie's going to be out. If we go up by two, we're going to win. Do your thing. Or if it was like, hey, just kill time. We'll probably be able to, you know, run this bad boy out if you split the double, kill enough time, and, you know, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
That perhaps needs to be a question that gets asked. But, gosh, I was not thrilled about it when it happened at the moment. And then, gosh, you know, like, on the other side of it, E-Town, heartbreaker with the timing of the timeout down the other end.
Yes, very untimely. Definitely killed him. And you know they've been rolling all year this year. You know we've been talking about E-Town, some stunning upsets. WNL was the one that sticks in my head to be specific, but like, no, not WNL. I have that wrong.
You're close, though.
Franklin and Marshall?
Yeah.
Yeah. Both blue and white teams that I don't like very much.
With an ampersand.
Yeah, yeah, true. Yeah, so that can get confusing. But, you know, they've had a great year this year.
Wait, what's your beef with WNL?
You know, not really, nothing too much. Ben Jones, my good friend, tried to get in there. They told him he was smart enough, and he's a freaking doctor at Hopkins. So, I mean.
Really? Ben Jones got denied?
Ben Jones
WNL?
Got denied, yeah. They were like, you're going to need some help to get in here. And it's like, all right, see you later, bud. Like,
did you say Lock Raven High School?
I guess they're not the most prestigious school in the area. Oh, man. But let's keep this train moving. Moving into the new MAC championship. This was another excellent game. We actually just got done rewatching
it. These were two games that before the day when we were talking about like the slate and all that type of stuff, I was like, new MAC and Landmark.
Yep.
Going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Like awesome games.
Yep. And but they did not disappoint. This
they were
we
so
saw.
Much better than the big conference games.
Yeah.
So much better.
Whew. So much. And we saw Babson take the cake 15-14 over MIT. This was just awesome. You know, we saw a classic Gebhardt game. What did he finish with? 8 points, 7 or 8 points, something along those lines. Like,
what's that expression? He gonna get his.
He gonna get his, and he got his. But Babson got one more, and that's all they needed there. Dan, what were your key takeaways from
this? Have you ever heard of a team winning three games in a row by one goal?
That sounds very not likely.
Have you ever heard of one team winning three games in a row by one goal, all by the score of 15-14?
Now, that's absurd. Crazy, some would say.
Some would say prophetic? Destined?
Destined? The team that is destined to be?
Some would say.
It could be Babson.
Now, I'll also throw this and take this bad boy 1 point further. They lost a game earlier in the year, 11-10, one goal game. Do you know who that was to? Off the top of your head.
I do not know.
Williams. Guess who they play?
Williams.
Guess who they play in the NCAA
Williams.
Tournament?
Williams.
Williams.
Yep.
So, likely to see another one goal game. It's probable to be 15-14. We'll find out. If odds tell us anything based on the last 2 weeks of Babson's season, that's what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to get into this game specifically a little bit here, buddy?
Specifically a little bit.
So you mentioned it. We just had a little rewatch on it.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your instant reactions.
Instant reaction.
Instant reactions to the rewatch, which doesn't seem possible, but is where we are.
Yep. I was really impressed with that non-releasable penalty. With that stretch that MIT went on, I do believe Babson went on. Yes, you know that was pretty impressive. But not only that, but just MIT skirting right back and battling it right back and making it a game after that. Which you think you get a big non-releasable penalty and the other team scores what two or three on it in the fourth quarter? You kind of think that that's it. You know, you kind of pack it in. But MIT did not do that. Came it out firing, tied it up. Brought it to overtime, which then, you know, we saw Babson win it in the end. So I just thought it was electric. Both teams came out hard, physical, getting ground balls, fighting for it. You know, another game where if you're a D3 lacrosse fan just looking for extra content, go check this one out. It was awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because the box score has it as only a minute penalty, but I swear it was a two-minute penalty.
It felt a lot longer if it was only a minute.
And it... they score twice in it, so like it had to be locked in, which makes me feel like it was longer than a minute. But anyways, so yeah, two goals in that stretch, which is, you know, a heartbreaker. If you're MIT, you end up in that situation. MIT, their sideline was worked up the whole game. They felt like they were constantly getting like these phantom resets, which is frustrating. You know, you end up on the other side of officiating, you know, where you want to in a tight game. And then you end up with the penalty late that then they get that takes a 10-10 game to 12-10. Mm-hmm. So you kind of are constantly fighting back and constantly like working to fight through it and fight through all the adversity. You end up that close just to end up on the wrong side of it for the second time in the same score, this time in overtime and also off of a failed clear. Mm. So, yeah, super frustrating for MIT, I got to feel like. But, yeah, Babson, a little bit of a horseshoe to him, a little bit of a Team of Destiny feel to him right now. Exciting to watch. This game is definitely pretty thrilling. There's a sequence in this game, I'll say it's in the third quarter. It's, like, down to the right, and there's a feed inside from Babson, and then the MIT defender collapses on it, puts the ball on the ground, and then the ensuing chaos for the ground ball, like, after the big hit on the feed inside is just, like, peak D3 conference championship sequence right there. Mm-hmm. Like, that was good stuff, man.
Love that. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Definite good stuff. Feel free to go back and watch this if you can. But we'll keep on
rolling. OT championship game,
OT,
man.
It doesn't keep... And I don't think they played any OT games for that year, too. Just a nice little fun fact.
Oh, that was the first one.
First OT game, yeah. Dang. Yep. Good stuff. But we'll keep on moving to the to the Sunyak championship. Yeah, you heard that correctly. Where Geneseo beat Cortland 13-7.
As soon as you said Geneseo, there's a lot of people that were saying, like, what's he talking about? What's mm-hmm. Oh, the Sunyak.
Sunyak. Sunyak,
Sunyak.
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 Sounds.
You know the SUNY schools?
Sounds New Yorkish.
State
yeah.
Universities of New York.
I got that one right. Look there at you that. Go. Look at that. Context clues. But, Dan, yeah, I personally didn't catch too much of this. So what do you got here?
Yeah, so I have seen a good amount of it. This is the first championship for Geneseo since, I think, 2007.
Oh, congratulations.
So, and they, again, this is one that wasn't totally surprising. I thought earlier in the year Cortland was going to end up being a bit better than they were. Numbers thought that as well. Efficiency numbers thought that as well for a good while. And then they go up and take a trip to Maryland. They go down and take a trip to Maryland. And Smoke Whack, who I thought was on the rise. Had a better season than they did last year. But at the time, I thought WAC was going to be, you know, a decent program.
That's the definition of a rise. Yeah,
yep.
They're on the up.
So they go and smoke them. Then they lose to Salisbury the following week. And it felt like after that, like, you never really saw the same team that you saw early in the year. And that Scranton-Cortland game early in the year was one that I really dissected to get a feel for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
But Cortland, like, I felt like the whole year really had pieces and just kind of never really was able to get them all working together at the right way. And then in this game, that all comes to a head as Geneseo holds them to 7. And, you know, Geneseo has some guys, man. Like, they've got some guys on the – particularly on the defensive side of the ball that are pretty athletic and, you know, make things tough for their guys. And then the familiarity with the opponent on top of it, like – they really just sink their teeth in and have a really strong performance on that side of the ball.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good point there. Anything else from this one before we move on to the Triple C championship?
Yeah, I can't move on from it too quickly there. We got to give some shout-outs to the guys that got them to 13 there, right?
Yeah, true. Who was the mainstays there for them?
So typically you see a guy in Christian Marcello Jr. that does a whole lot of goal scoring for him in this game. But here today, you actually had three different guys scoring 4 points, all four via goals. So definitely was in the picture that guys were going to be trying to get through their strong hands and try and win their matchups to their best of their ability and let them fly. And that definitely was working for them as Brady Sullivan, Jimmy Atkinson, and William McCuskey all hit for 4 points, all on goals. So definitely a interesting breakdown there for them.
Very, very good. Yeah, like that a lot. All right. Well, we'll keep moving on. Hit the CCC Conference Championship.
Yep.
We saw Western New England taking on Endicott, and we saw a pretty dominant performance by Western New England get into the tournament yet again, 18-9. Dan, what'd you see here? Break this one down for me.
Yeah, so you ready for another trivia question to something that you said last week?
Okay, yep. Mm-hmm.
You were spot on with Scranton, something you were not spot on about. And I think it's particularly interesting that you uttered the number that you did. It was kind of prophetic, actually.
Uh-oh.
Is prophetic a word, by the way?
I've
said it multiple times around people, and every time I do, someone says, like, what?
I'm the worst person to ask this. I'm terrible with grammar and stuff like that.
Let's not even concern ourselves with the truth then.
Okay, yeah.
You know
what
I'm
saying. Let's just roll with it. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Perfect. Because last week you came in here, you sat in that exact seat that you're sitting in, you spoke into that exact microphone, and you said that no team is coming back from having lost in the regular season by 9. Do you recall that?
It is coming back to me a little bit.
Okay, cool. And then I made a joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's what you do. You're a jokester.
I am a big jokester. Guess what Western New England did?
They won.
That's
by,
correct.
I think 9 was the final tally.
Guess what they lost to Endicott by in the regular season?
Was it 8?
Nope.
Oh, it was a 9.
So that's kind of coincidence, right?
Yeah.
All right. You ready for another one?
Oh, we get 2. Doubleheader. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Hope. They're going to be playing Christopher Newport this weekend.
Yes.
They won their Pool A bid. Guess what they won by?
9.
Guess who they beat?
A team they lost to by 9.
Albion.
Yes.
That's correct.
Albion.
And guess what the score of the regular season game was?
18-9.
21-12.
Ooh.
Guess what that differential is?
9. Oh, yeah. Numbers are hard.
So you've not just one instance of a team not only coming back to win a game that they originally lost by 9, but both teams then win the game by 9 also.
Wow.
It's a monstrous turnaround.
What a turnaround.
And honestly, Western New England and Hope need to be sending you a shirt because you jinxed this into the existence.
They're welcome.
The Lax gods heard you.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, really?
Yeah.
No teams coming back from 9?
Would it be surprised to tell you I'm the biggest Hope fan in the world?
Actually, it wouldn't. What's your mom's name is Faith, right?
My sister's middle name
is Hope. Hope. There it is. Yes. I knew there was something.
Yes.
I knew
she's named after the school.
So you got Hope overseeing you?
Yeah, 100% all day.
Oh, ride.
Yeah, that's the big dog bracket.
I actually think that's why that group is at, I don't know for sure, but I think that's why that group is Friday, Saturday.
Oh, is it?
Which I guess we'll get to bracket discussion in a bit. But that game's, they're Friday, Saturday.
Okay, get the Sunday off.
Yeah, everybody else is Saturday, Sunday, but they're Friday, Saturday. And I don't really know why, except for that I'm just going to assume that it's because Hope is religious.
Okay. I think we roll with that until we hear otherwise.
Seems good enough to me.
Love it. Let's keep on going here. So another great game that we saw on Sunday was the Liberty League Championship, and actually was not that great of a game as Union was routed by RIT with another 18-9 final. This was one that I was a little late to the show on Sunday, and I pulled up the scoreboard to check out games that I should pop on.
Oof.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, not this one. Dan, what kind of led to this here? What happened? What was the downfall for Union? I mean, we were kind of expecting it, but how did it actually play out?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, like, RIT and Union just, it's usually such a battle. This one really wasn't that close, you know. Like, RIT was just dominant. And if RIT was dominant is basically almost always followed by, gosh, they're so good on the ground. Like, every ground ball, every 50-50, every, like, awkward bouncing ball, those types of things just 1,000% of the time come up RIT way. And then you get the awkward scenarios out of it, the unsettled situations, the transition, the sub games, like all that type of stuff. And they're just such a bear to prepare for and, you know, to even, like, be ready for those situations when they come. But even when you are ready for them, they're so hard to defend. And the only way to eliminate them is to be better than RIT off the ground. And, I won't say it's not possible because, like, it's happened, but it ain't likely.
100%. I think you hit the nail on the head there. They just seem like they just out-hustled them, out-physicaled them, out-ground-balled them, and, you know, just kind of dominated in between the lines and the little things. You know, they did all that perfectly. And, you know, we've seen Union come up come up short a little bit this season. You know, has everything kind of hasn't gone their way throughout the year. And I think this was just kind of culmination of everything throughout the season coming to play.
Yeah, man, it's 11-1 at the half, like we said. Same with the NESCAC championship. Both are 11-1 at the half and, like, just kind of, you know, duds.
Yep. Yeah. Any players or anything you want to highlight here before we get into the NESCAC too and get kind of the same story?
I guess we should go with the tournament MVP.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so that goes to Taylor Jensen, LSM, RIT, 6 ground balls, 4 calls turnovers, and a little goal for good measures.
There you go.
You never really want to give someone just 6 ground balls and 4 calls turnovers. If you're going to give them that, you might as well send them off with a goal
Just send them off with a goal. I think it was pretty obvious that he was the most dominant player on the field. You know, both teams, whenever anybody played RIT, it was Jensen that was dominating things. So, well deserved there. Good victory for them. Another game similar to this. We saw the NESCAC championship on Sunday, which Tufts absolutely took it to Middlebury, 19-6. Was not the game that I was expecting at all. Dan, any thoughts from this one here?
I puked a little in my mouth when it went to 10-0 after taking Middlebury on the side quest with someone. I think I took Tufts with you, but I took Middlebury to somebody else.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know.
Rough pick. That's fun. Stirring the pot.
I was not that close.
No.
At least that way I was going to be right either way. You
exactly.
Know?
Like you won somewhere.
I was going to eat my cake, take my cake and eat it too, or whatever that expression is.
Yep. Yeah, this one was a tough one. I mean, I just don't know how you stop Tufts right now. You know, they dominated Amherst. They dominated in this. Like, we've seen Middlebury. They have the most experience in D3 right now. Like, they do the little things right. They ride hard, and it really didn't even make a difference in this game. You know, Tufts got what they wanted to get and capitalized on everything. It was an absolutely dominant performance there.
Yeah, and earlier we mentioned an attack trio, an attack line that did some damage. Here you have another instance of that as Kurt Brune, Tommy Swink, and Jack Boyden combined for 18 points on the day.
Oof.
And Boyden goes for 20 points between the 2 days of NESCAC semis and NESCAC championship. So, yeah, he has had quite the season. And Tommy Swink and Brune both have also been excellent as his line mates there down at attack. And just to keep highlighting a couple other guys here, Jack Regnery is a freshman from Florida. Very, very speedy. Does a great job of, he is tailor-made for that tough system of just, like, full-throttled attack, always be dodging, full head of steam, and, you know, attack with speed. He ends up with 4 goals on the game. And then you earlier in the year talked about, who'd you give the dude tag to? Was it Del Cristo or Tagliaferri?
Tagliaferri.
All right, gotcha. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go Del Cristo here, but they are very similar players. Del Cristo just gets more of his time for Tufts defensively, but had they just switched spots and Del Cristo was an offensive midfielder, I don't know that it would look totally different. Definitely two just athletic players that have no problem getting out and, again, all these guys that we talk about, like, just fit this tough system of playing with speed, attacking, with a full head of speed. And, they're short sticks in transition. It's a different type of transition with Tufts than when you play RIT. You know, like RIT, that transition, not to say it doesn't happen fast, but it's like the ball is in the air and it goes through. It might touch 5 different sticks while the ball is, you know, in transition.
Mm-hmm.
Tufts, it's like these offensive midfielders from high school that would be offensive midfielders at like 95% of Division III are playing defense and then all of a sudden have like a 60-yard head field sprint to then attack in all this space and be attacking your offensive midfielders. You know, it's like, it's just dangerous.
You almost want to go there to be a defensive midi just so you can get the points.
It's really, to me, it's offensive midfielders in recruiting get to Tufts and our defensive midfielders and attackmen if you aren't one of the three starters, are just midfielders.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is like a recruited midfielder that plays what we would consider D-mid, but they probably call something like
transition mid or midi or something.
Or like have a nickname for it, like killers or something like that.
Yeah, something sick that makes you want to really get into it.
Yeah, like you know how we give whatever segments nicknames or something like that just to kind of give it an identity and then like we start to automatically love it for no reason? Same thing. Totally applies there for sports
for
as
the
well.
Jumbos, yeah.
Maybe not specifically the Jumbos. Like my team, we call our midi back, like our offensive midfielder that goes out there. There's one of them that's designated to be the guy that would like go to the far third in the ride and then get into the hole. And if everybody has to sub, he'd be the one that would stay and play defense. He's called the digger. They all of a sudden are like, yeah, I'm tough. I want to be the digger.
Okay.
Same thing.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Same thing. Same, but different.
Different, but same. Yep. Let's move on to our last championship game that we're going to discuss here, which was a good one, the Centennial Conference. It wasn't the Muhlenberg Mules. My take from week one is over officially.
Officially.
But we did see the Red Devils take on Swarthmore, and the Red Devils did take the championship home 13-7.
Back-to-back champs.
Back-to-back champs for Dickinson. Everything kind of seems to be flowing right for them. They've fixed the path, so to speak, and they're on the right track here. Dan, what were your sort of key takeaways from this one here?
The better game of the Centennial like conference playoffs was Swarthmore Gettysburg in the semis. That was the more like exciting game. This one, like, I won't say Dickinson just rolls because like Swarthmore is always kind of in shouting distance and like
they were never out of it.
Yeah,
at any point in time, out of it.
Correct. You also never really thought that they were that in it either. Yeah. You know, they were just kind of in that like in between of, you know, existing and like competing.
Yep.
This one like really not a whole ton to say, but I think ultimately what becomes the conversation here when you talk about this championship compared to the semis and so on and so forth is like how Swarthmore is able to beat Gettysburg three times in a row, but struggles so much in this Dickinson matchup. And so with those questions in mind, what do you think I did?
I think you went back to the Gettysburg Dickinson game.
Hit the films.
And hit the books a little bit.
Hit the books.
Okay. What'd you see there?
I feel like my point here is going to be that Gettysburg offensively plays in like a much tighter box, which allows Swarthmore to get away with holding matchups and showing way more compared to Dickinson, who attacks in larger space with more head of steam. And it allows them to kind of take more advantage of the Swarthmore defensive look where they like to show and kind of hold spots. And they're also pretty disciplined into a double pole, getting a short stick down on attackmen. And again, Dickinson plays three attackmen that really can hurt you as Dodgers, all three of them, in different ways. Schluter and Porter are pretty similar. Like, both are going to attack you with speed and quickness. Thurston is going to attack you more with, like, leaning and a frame and get you to dangerous space. But he, of the two, is actually, in a weird way, the one that I would be least comfortable with short sticking. So teams eventually, or typically when they do it to Dickinson, who often requires a double pull, they get the short stick and put him down on Schluter. And he was totally up for it in this matchup, and right from the get-go, really. Very first touch, he like takes his right hand, comes up the hash, and draws enough attention to be able to throw back to Thurston, who crease dives and scores. And that goal was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell right from the get-go, like, Schluter was confident in the look, knew what he wanted to do, and because he gets that point, like, on his very first touch, like, he definitely just goes through the rest of the game particularly confident and poised. I feel like that's ultimately the difference, is that, like, Dickinson does a better job of attacking him in space, whereas Gettysburg is, like, leaning and trying to use more of their, like, frame and size, and that allows Swarthmore to hold matchups, show more, and, like, bait you into, like, leaving that space. So definitely interesting there. I don't totally know what to else to justify it to, other than the additional like icing on the cake for it, is that Dickinson owns possessions against him. John McKee has been excellent in both games, and not just creating possessions for him, but he winning forward and scoring and assisting and like creating dangerous looks, and like he makes a big difference. He's what I would call the X factor in the Dickinson Swarthmore matchups of the last few games.
That's a good takeaway there. Glad you dove into the film and did that for the
You know how I be?
Yeah, you know
how I do.
You live and breathe this stuff, man. Live and breathe it. Absolutely love it. So that's a good recap there for our conference play. We had some great games. Let's get into our statistical players of the week before we get into our bracket reaction and breakdown. This was a lot of fun. We had some great standouts this week. Dan, who was one guy that really shined statistically?
All right. So I will also, before we totally get into this, would like to put a little preface and remind people that this is our time to shout out some of the teams that don't get talked about as much. So if your name is Connor Herays or Jack Boyden and you play for Cabrini and Tufts, and you had 12 points this week, and you don't get talked about during the segment, it's not our fault.
Yes.
Right? And this right now, talking about how Connor Herays and Jack Boyden had 12 points, Jack against Amherst in the semifinals, and Connor in the Atlantic East Championship against Marymount, this right now, saying that they had 12 points in those games is not us talking about how they had 12 points.
Yeah, we're definitely not shining light on them at all.
To be clear.
100%.
So, with that preface said, let's get into the official statistical players of the week.
Love it. Love it. Let's do it. First one I'm going to go with. I'm going to pick the first one here. It's got to be
I got a feeling you're on the goalies this week.
You think so?
Yeah, I got a feeling you're on the goalies this week.
All right, if you say so. Yeah, I do have one in mind, so let me bring him to attention. And apologies for the pronunciation of the last name, as always. But we got
No. You're gonna nail this.
You think so?
I think it's way less complicated than you think.
All right. Well, shout out Garrett Ruzkowski.
Boom.
Maine Maritime. There we go. Yeah.
How'd you? You got Ruzkowski, but fucked up Maine.
I know. sounds like something I did, right? Dang it. Well. Maine Maritime, he had 20 saves for the title game. Absolute stud. Shout out, Garrett. And then the second one, we talked about their game earlier, but that's Mark Pav from Geneseo, who had 19 saves against Cortland to take home the title there. So two stellar performances, 39 saves between the two of them, both to win the conference titles. Absolute studs. Good shout outs there.
Boom.
Love
Mark
it.
Pav, 19 saves to bring a championship to a team that hasn't had one since 2007.
That is just That's legendary stuff.
Enshrine him.
Put him in. Who do you got, though, Dan? Who you guys?
So you took two goalies, which is cool because now I'm going to take two offensive players and I won't even feel bad.
Yeah.
We have a third player in addition to those first two that we did not talk about.
Definitely did not talk about.
Matt Daly, who had 12 points, 4 goals, 8 assists, and that was for New England College against Rosemont. And here's a cool thing that happened this weekend. You ready for this? The CSAC and the NECC, which is New England something something, and the CSAC, whatever happened, I don't know, but they combined their conferences, played each other, conference champion, V conference champion, for an AQ.
That's hot.
Yes. So CSAC v NECC for an AQ, and that saw NEC taking down Rosemont. And in that game, you had Matt Daly tally 12 points, 4 goals, and 8 assists.
Mm.
And then another game we've already talked about, Western New England, came back, beat Endicott.
Yep.
Lost to him by 9 in the regular season, came back, beat him by 9, despite you claiming that that was an impossibility. Dylan Handley, 2 goals, 6 assists, hot hand, quick step, drawing defense, finding lanes, slip it, skip it through, feed it inside, you name it, he's got it. Dylan Handley from Western New England.
Ooh, love that. Great breakdown there. Sounds like he was all over it.
Oh, yeah. Boom. So those will be our guys. And then just to reiterate, didn't talk about those guys, and we definitely earlier in the episode did not talk about how John DeFazio had 7 calls turnovers and 8 ground balls and was the tournament MVP. So, yeah, this segment is for talking about the other teams, not Cabrini-Tufts or Salisbury.
Yeah.
Who we definitely had studs guys. Do some big stuff in championship games.
Yeah, big-time players come to play in big-time games.
All right, let's keep this bad boy moving. Let's go. We have one more segment of review here. Then we got an ad read.
Oh, first ever ad read?
And then I'm hitting you with some we'll call it bracket breakdown.
Love that. Yep. Just flows off the tongue. Nicely.
Bracket breakdown. Yep. Yep. All right, so featured Avengers, Western New England. Boom, 9.
Boom, 9 goals.
Yep. Hope. Boom, 9 goals.
Whew.
Yeah.
Talk about the Avengers.
Yeah. Albion, who good team too. Both great of those team. Both of those teams, Albion and Endicott, definitely held 1 seeds and would have been teams that Vegas, D3 Vegas would have been heavily favored.
Heavily. Yeah. Yep.
So, very impressive there. Scranton, 2 seed. So, they had beat Catholic, hosted them, beat them again, but then come back and avenge a regular season loss to E-Town.
Yep.
So, boom, E-Town was the 1 seed. Scranton comes back, vengeance. John Carroll, vengeance over Baldwin Wallace. Dropped a 1-goal game earlier in the year. Maybe not 1 goal, but dropped a low-scoring game earlier in the year. Came back, beaten by 1 in an equally low-scoring game, 6-5.
Oh, yeah.
So super, super, super tense game there. And there's an awesome clip on Twitter that if you go look through the John Carroll Athletics Twitter of one of the late goals in that game, and it's an awesome clip. You can feel all the intensity of the OAC championship there in that one.
Love that.
And then our third one, outside of our 9-goal game winners, our third one here is another 3 seed. Well, actually not another. I think this is our highest seed to win a tournament championship. If I'm wrong on that, I apologize. Mm-hmm. But I do believe this was our highest seed, meaning lowest seed, meaning least likely team based on the seedings to have won, which is not that reflective of actual picks because this was the team that was ranked nationally the highest of the three. But anyways, WNO comes back, lost to Lynchburg and Hampton Sydney in the regular season, beat them both. Big time Avengers there. They're like the head of the superhero committee with everybody else behind them in some sort of V. And then
they're the Captain America.
Sure.
Yeah.
Boom. And then I got 2 more here to throw at you. Pfeiffer lost to Piedmont in the regular season. Piedmont actually played spoiler in a big way to Pfeiffer. I kind of thought Pfeiffer was going to go undefeated through the regular season. And then Piedmont played spoiler for him in a big way there, which then Pfeiffer righted the wrong there in the conference championship, beating them then. And then our last one doesn't come in a conference championship, but is our biggest disparity. You had Alfred take down Nazareth in the regular season. Do you remember us talking about that?
I sure do.
Empire 8. This was to talk about who was going to take on St. John Fisher.
Yep.
Semifinal rematch, Nazareth-Alfred. You know Nazareth won. How much did they win by? Hold on. Let me set the table here.
Yep.
I'm going to confirm this real quick as I continue to buy some time for myself, but I believe that the first matchup was a 2-goal Alfred win.
Oh, okay.
So let me confirm that for you. I'll get you a score. 13-11. Alfred beat Nazareth 13-11 around the midway point of the season.
Okay.
What did Nazareth beat Alfred by in the conference championship?
I'm going to go 6 goals.
That would be a lot, right?
That would be.
You lose to a team by 2, then you beat them by 6.
That's a massive cup. That's an 8-goal swing.
Yep, 8-goal swing. So, yeah, that's going to be not enough.
Higher? Like a 10-pointer?
So you lose to a team by 2
yeah.
in the regular season. You come back, beat them by 10 in the conference conference playoffs.
That would be massive.
Not enough.
No. No. What was it? 14th?
Take another guess, man. 14. So your official final guess.
14.
Official final guess is that they lost to the team by 2, came back and beat them by 14 in the conference championship. Goals. Give me a score.
Ooh, give me 20-6.
Close.
Yeah.
Close.
19-5.
20-5. So it was a 15 goal.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. An absolute rout.
It's quite perplexing. Definitely a situation where you go back and you're like, how did we drop that one and then come back and beat them by 15 in the playoffs, you know? But, hey.
Do love the bounce back.
Got to love getting some vengeance. Maybe they've just been working every day with them in mind, knowing that eventually they'd see the Saxons again, and that time they'd be ready
that
for them.
That would be the day.
And then they'd be ready for them.
And it was the day.
So, yeah, quite entertaining result there between that one. And that, again, was not in a conference championship. That was just in a semifinal. Okay. But I had to mention.
Of course.
Had to.
Yeah, so kind of like
the how could I ignore that?
Yeah, yeah. In there, great story. Not the keynote guy.
All right. Well, while you get us set here for our next segment, I'm going to hit us with our ad read.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Are you listening to this as a D3 fan that would love to compete against the big dog in a bracket challenge? Do you know about Inside the Cross fan picks? Please consider going to the Inside the Cross calendar scoreboard, filling out the fan picks section, taking your fan picks, and tracking for a prize!
What?
Yeah, I don't know if I actually have clearance to reveal this, so perhaps I'm going to end up editing this out. But we are hosting a fan picks challenge.
Oh,
we
okay.
have prizes on the line. We have a sponsor. There's prizes on the line. It's for across all divisions.
Do we know the sponsor yet?
I do.
Okay.
I'll tell you.
Okay.
You want me, should I say it now and bleep it on the episode?
Yeah, bleep it.
People, that's cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that just builds up the hype.
It's the... Bleep.
No way. Oh my goodness. I can't believe that.
You ever heard of that?
Once or twice.
You ever know those guys?
Maybe in passing.
Yeah. So, got a little sponsor deal in place for that. Not me personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. I'm excited to actually get the details for it, roll it out. But yeah, fan picks. Essentially, the way that I would describe it is you can go onto the IL website. You can pick the teams that you want to root for. You can do it however you want. You can pick the teams you think are going to win. You can pick the teams that you think have the best colors. You can go by mascots. You can do whatever you want. Go through, you pick the teams, and then essentially there's a formula, I'll say, that calculates the popularity of picks. So say you and I are playing against each other, and obviously everybody thinks you're going to win. So everybody votes big dog going to win, except for one person. They vote for me. That person that votes for me, and then when I beat you, gets a weighted number of points.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you get rewarded for picking upsets, and you get less rewarded for being correct on favorites. But, hey, popularity decides.
Sounds like a good time.
The fan votes, baby. Fan votes decide.
Love that.
And this is available season long. But the point is, right now we got a NCAA tournament bracket segment. We started the season over, new standings, it's all fresh. You can go in, you start your fan picks through, and we got prizes on the line.
Let's do it. Love it.
You got to get yours in too.
Yeah, it's coming in hot.
Me and you should put a single bet. That should be a end of the year bet that we start, we go through, winner of the fan picks gets, you know, whatever.
Top
or loser
prize. Yeah. Loser has to do something at the national championship.
Boom.
Yeah.
That seems like a good idea.
A streak on the
field.
We'll
start.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll start workshopping that.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
All right. So with our ad read done, that was definitely a read and totally not anything that I made up.
100%.
There's 1,000% words here in front of me that I was reading. We're going to move on to bracket reveals.
Yeah.
Bracket Reaction. Bracket breakdowns.
Sheesh. Breaking it down. Wow. I think just wow. Is that a good? What's one word that you would just say after the dust settled, you saw the full bracket laid out in front of your face?
Let's effin' go.
Yes. Those are three words, but I'll take it. So
sorry.
One saying.
Effin' go.
Yeah, it counts. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Let's effin'. But yeah, I mean, so I'll give a couple different reactions.
Okay.
From different perspectives, different point of views. Because I got a couple of them.
Yeah.
I got the York former coach and fan and...
which I'll hit pretty heavily on.
And uncle of a commit and, friend of the program ties. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature that led me to one train of thoughts. I wear a Inside the Cross hat that I like to break these things down and think of it pretty analytically and share those thoughts and... give D3 fans something to be D3 fans about.
Yeah.
So I got that. And then I got my third one of just human fan interest. That is aside from York and aside from my job, but is just a genuine, before I worked for Inside the Cross or before I went to York, I would go to Stevenson Salisbury games, an element of that that existed, before any of that. So mm-hmm. I got all the perspectives
here. You got it all. Okay.
So
all
right. I kind of got hit with three different types of waves and phases that took me down three different trains of thought. So with that kind of in mind, where should I go first?
I want you to start with your second one there. So put your Inside Lacrosse analytical hat on.
So to quote also myself on Twitter.
Yes.
Kenyon! The boys are in. The owls are dancing.
Wow.
Who got picked? So it was an interesting moment. I thought RPI was going to get in, so I was wrong. But at the same time, I was kind of excited for Kenyon. Yeah. And, I think personally, if I had to pick between the two of them on a neutral field, who I thought would win the matchup, RPI and Kenyon, probably take an RPI.
Most likely.
But, I mean, for a million reasons, we talked about all this sorts of bracketology. We've talked about lots of different, so on and so forth. We got a really good question and answer segment here coming up. And within all of that, I really felt it was ultimately going to come down to two spots for three teams with Lynchburg, RPI, and Kenyon. I thought that exact scenario was pretty clear Sunday morning when we woke up. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty clear Sunday morning when we woke up that was going to be it. And again, I thought RPI would take it in that moment. But Kenyon, 14-1 team. The one loss they have is to Ohio Wesleyan. They beat them in the semis of their conference play, so they kind of righted the wrong there, which I think, I don't know if it helps or not, but it kind of, cancels out perhaps the loss a little bit.
Probably so.
At least makes it look a little, better at the bare minimum. And then again, we said it earlier in the episode, I think if they show up to that championship game and Dennison just smokes them, I think it would have been really hard for the committee to take them.
Yeah.
But they do quite the opposite. They show up, they go up 10-3 and choke the life out of the game and end up, struggling to find the back of the net in the second half. But sheesh, they give Dennison quite the run. They beat him in the regular season. So, I mean, frankly, I think it's kind of cool that they're in.
Yeah.
I'm bummed.
It's fun. They've had a great year.
Yeah.
So definitely well deserved for them.
Bummed for RPI and probably Bowden and Slew, who
I'd say those were the first three out.
Yeah, probably the group. And then Clarkson maybe after that.
Yeah. Four.
But yeah, so it's tough. I think that in a head to head, I would take the teams that didn't make it. But, I think in a head-to-head, I would kind of take those teams that didn't make it. But at the same time, like, 38-team D3 tournament is fun to have, you know, a team like Kenyon in. And if a team like Kenyon can go 14-1 and not get in, that's also a problem, right? Like, there seems to be some sort of, like, you damned if you do, damned if you don't to it. And in this moment, like, I have bigger issues with, like, seeding and paths than I do with Kenyon over RPI.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And if you are going to nitpick the bracket, you know, I think that's a better place to do it rather than who got in versus who didn't, because there's a lot of deserving teams. And I think the committee did a great job of putting them all together and, you know, really determining the best teams and who had the best seasons.
And frankly, we're still really early into this process of living in the five-region system.
True.
Where, like, you know, perhaps in the old system, like, you know, we aren't talking about Kenyon, but it is five-region system. They were the third team in the region or the fourth team in the region. And they had a great record going for them, you know? So, like, by the criteria, it's not obviously always the best, but by the criteria, it fits. And, you know, that's how we ended up with Kenyon there.
Yep. Good points there. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the York fan perspective. You know, that's something that you had touched on and that I also have, you know, rooting interest in. And was one of my biggest takeaways when the bracket was revealed. So let me jump in here real quick and talk about this. York got screwed over in this.
Roasted.
Absolutely. Like, they come in, what are they, 14-5 team. They've, you know, ups and downs this year for sure. But they're definitely righting the ship on a pretty good path right now.
High strength of schedule.
Very good strength of schedule. They've played some great teams. And then they end up getting the Cabrini draw first game, which, you know what, it's the tournament. You got to play somebody good. That's fine. But it is pretty early to match those two teams up. It's going to be one of the best rounds of 32 games, I'd imagine. And then, you know, if they do get past that, they're seeing Tufts right away at home for the host site right there. So, like, that's an incredible path just to get out of, you know, the original pool there into the round of 16 after that. So.
And I'm going to throw you a life raft to anybody who's screaming, like, get this homer off of my out of my ears.
Yeah.
This sucks for Tufts, too. And yeah. Salisbury on the other side has a very similar scenario where Tufts and Salisbury are, you know, like, two of the highest seeds in the tournament. They've had are ranked number one and number two in, I think, every poll.
Yep, week after week.
It's been this way for a few weeks now. And they get rewarded for their season's body of work with being, like, with Amherst and York? Like, that's tough. That's Meanwhile, you have, you know, like, Denison is going to see the winner of Lynchburg and St. John Fisher, who are two teams that I think both fall, like, in a some sort of tag team combination fight. If Lynchburg and St. John Fisher were going to play Amherst and York in a tag team lacrosse game, I'm taking Amherst and York.
10 out of 10.
You know, and that's not just based off of, you know, like, records or anything, but, like, we've seen three of the four of those teams play in person, and, like, yeah, I'm taking Amherst and York in that. And Fisher has had, you know, they're playing the best that they've played all year. They're the healthiest that they've been all year. They're the most ready that they've been all year to make a run. But they had dropped some serious losses in a row in the beginning of the season. And, yeah, man, between the two of them, Lynchburg gets in on a bubble, and St. John Fisher, you know, is in through the Empire 8, but didn't have the greatest season. Say they lost to say Nazareth pulls out the upset in that game, St. John Fisher ain't in. And then that draw is pretty dang good compared to, you know, perhaps some of the other ones.
Yeah.
Or then, like, just to further my point, like, who's better, Dickinson or Tufts?
I'd go Tufts.
Who would you rather play, the winner of Cabrini and York or the winner of Stevens and Kenyon?
I'd probably pick Stevens Kenyon there.
Correct. Dickinson gets the winner of Stevens Kenyon while Tufts will play the winner of Cabrini York. Like, I get the geography of it. Like, you know, there's, and for those who don't understand when I say that, like, there's a 500-mile rule where over that, the NCAA gets involved in having to pay for travel for in terms of flights and things like that, which now you're talking about dollars that they don't, they either don't have or don't want or can't dish out, whatever it is. I don't know. And so, yeah, that was pretty, pretty interesting there.
Yeah, very much. But that's my York 2 cents with it. I guess go to your third, just general D3 fan. What'd you think of the bracket breakdown?
Oh, yeah. So that's where I like get the let's go. Like that, yeah. I got to that point pretty quickly. Like, I think looking at this, the bracket just as a whole, and you see the 38 teams in front of you, and three teams from the top 20 aren't in it, which means 17 are. So that's, you know,
which, great job by you.
Like, that's exciting.
Gotta give some credit. Credit to you.
Is not the point of my.
I know that's not why you brought it up, yeah. But that's why I want to shed some personal light on it. Like, if you're a fan of D3 and want to just stay in the loop, like, Kaplan's top 20, top 30 has included all of these teams throughout the entire year.
Much love there, baby.
Of course, If you ever in the need, just go back and look through that. You'll find the answers you're looking for.
I did get a couple things wrong on bracketology.
Nobody's perfect.
I was wrong about RPI. Thought they were in. The other ones I was right. And then I was wrong on host sites.
Those are tougher to,
which I guess that's probably a good point to get into.
Yeah.
Host sites, not a totally known like aspect of all of this, but in order to even be a host site, you have to submit a bid. So like a team, I believe Middlebury and Swarthmore would have been more likely to be host sites if not for the geography than Denison. I also believe that Middlebury, who's in the same pod as Union, would have been more likely to be a host site and on it, like, got the higher seed, so like that's pretty clear. So them not getting that host site is either because Middlebury didn't put in the bid that I'm referring to, that you have to put in like relatively early in the year, and whether you either just didn't know, or maybe they put in a host site for the girls. Like, I don't know. There's a million different things that could have led to not putting in that bid. So I don't know if that's the case, or if that they knew the matchups they wanted to send into that pod, and that including St. Mary's meant that Vermont was too far, and therefore it needed to happen at Union, who I'm sure submitted a bid on the heels of last year.
Yes.
And so between that, I think that's kind of how that little wrinkle unfolds. But it's definitely one of the things that I was surprised about upon the bracket reveal was that Middlebury wasn't hosting and that Union was.
Yeah, I thought that was a good point and good breakdown here. So we did get a few questions come in from Twitter, some various people and whatnot. Just submitting some general questions about some snubs and things like that. So we figured this would be a perfect time to break it down, dive into a couple of those. So I'm going to be playing the fan perspective, the smart fans that all of you are, submitting these great questions. I'm going to be you guys asking them to Dan.
Should we do a quick check to make sure that see if any more have come through?
Oh, yeah. Let me pull it up real quick.
All right. So just checked, and you should go ahead and you can start with this first one, and I'm going to go ahead and add one more to the bottom.
Perfect. All right. I'll start it off here. First one we got, they asked, did the committee do a good job picking the teams, and what are the biggest snubs? I think I can jump into this one early here while you're finishing typing. But we did talk about the four biggest snubs that we thought.
Yeah, I feel like some of these questions here we've already hit throughout, so we can just throw the question out and say we've mentioned it, and then reiterate.
Yep, so it's going to be SLU, Bowdoin, RPI, and Clarkson would be your four biggest snubs, with my personal opinion being RPI, that biggest snub, that one on the bubble that should have gotten in. But all in all, I think the committee did an excellent job with the selections. You know, you got so many AQs you got to work through, and only so many at-larges you can really pick from, and thought they did a great job there. Dan, anything else to add on that?
It's such a difficult process. I can't imagine being in the room, especially like when it came down to debating the last two, three teams for that last spot. I kind of wish, like, I would have paid a lot of money or done some horrible things or maybe just done a lot of really nice things to have been able to, like, be a fly on the wall in that conversation.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet to hear that. So moving along here, Old School Jones is asking us, Kenyon, what happened to Bowden? Which we've alluded to already on. Bowden, I'd probably say third biggest snub for me personally. I would put it at RPI, SLU, then Bowden for my 1, 2, and 3. But Kenyon, we talked about them earlier. They've had a great season. There's a great special on their face-off guy if you want to go check that out. He's been absolutely stellar this year. But they've been a great team, had avenged their one big loss. Other than that, you know, pretty straightforward. And then they were up 10-3 in their conference championship game. So definitely not a slouch team by any means, not a team you can, you know, just chalk up as an easy win in your first round of NCAAs at all.
Everything you just said there was really well said, I think.
Yeah.
Because you sounded really good, but I'm not totally sure I processed a single thing while I read a tweet.
That's perfect. No worries. just know that I crushed it, and we'll keep moving right along. Yep, I think that's a good point. Another question in that same realm here is, explain why Clarkston or SLU didn't get into the tournament. Both of them would easily handle 65% of the teams that made it.
Yeah, so Clarkston and Bowden, I think, outside of RPI are the next – no, excuse me, SLU and Bowden outside of RPI are the next two teams that would have gone.
Yep.
And then after that, I think Clarkston is, like, breathing down the neck of St. Lawrence, which – is only based on the result. Like, they split on the season, so is tough, but I think St. Lawrence gets the bid just based on, like, out of conference. It's not the bid, but gets the bump over them based on the winning the second matchup and
strength of schedule.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And anyway, so all of them end up missing it, but ultimately it's just because of where they fell in the regional rankings. Like, teams like Lynchburg and Kenyon fall higher in their region compared, like the committee's always going to take a region four team number 2 or 3 over a region 2 team 6, you yeah. know, like, that's just the way that the 5-region system is built.
Yep, way the cookie crumbles with that. And lastly here, this might be a Billy Hot Takes one, but how does the 7-loss Heifers make it into the tournament? They've kept it, is it because they kept it close in the Tufts game?
So Williams, I mean, they were the 3 seed of the tournament, of the NESCAC tournament, mm-hmm. over Amherst, who took the 4. And really, the first region 1, essentially is the NESCAC standings, and then the next, like, regionally ranked team after that is, like, usually, like, Endicott, who would have been, like, the best team in the CCC at that point.
Yeah.
And so it really is essentially, like, the top few teams in the NESCAC, and then that, with Williams being the 3 seed in the NESCAC, they took that edge over Amherst in the region. And I thought that they were going to get 4 teams. So I saw Williams as a lock from the start. And, 7 losses. But it's really about wins, strength of schedule, and, you know, bolstering that resume with wins rather than, you know, you can take a few losses as long as they're not, like, horrible losses, you know, like,
yep.
It ends up being all right.
Definitely. That's very well said there. So that's the end of our questions. So let's get into a little bit of a light preview for the Wednesday games, and then kind of talk about some of our matchups that we could see in the round of 16 and 32 that we're pretty pumped about. So Wednesday, we're going to have Marine Maritime taking on Emmanuel, and the winner of that is going to go up and play Tufts. Then we're going to have IW University taking on Aurora, and the winner there is going to be playing Denison as the host site. Then we're going to have Center and Pfeiffer, where the winner is going to be taking on WNL there. New England College is going to be taking on Western Connecticut, where the winner is going to play RIT. St. Mary's is going to be playing Merchant Maritime, who the winner is going to be playing Middlebury. And nope, it's not Merchant Maritime, it's Merchant Marine. I really struggle with these marine schools, and there's like 4 of them in here. And then finally, we're going to have John Carroll and Wake Forest, who the winner is going to be playing Dickinson. Dan, most excited first round matchup here, early round matchup. What are you excited for?
Oh, man. I think I would say center and Pfeiffer.
Oh, yeah. Real good picks there.
Some, a little bit of a geography battle with some southern and some, like, southwestern from where we're typically used to.
Yeah.
So you got a little bit of the geography battle there. And then, yeah, I think that's going to be a good one. I think Pfeiffer is in a position where they feel like they were, you know, undercredited throughout the season. And now they make the tournament and have a chance to kind of make some noise. And it starts with center.
Yep, definitely. And, you know, if I had to pick, like, one of those top-tier teams that we just discussed about who they're going to go on to play with, I think WNL might be the most beatable one, per se, possibly. Not to say that, like, that's going to be, you know, like, Pfeiffer could take it to them if they get there. But just listing out of all those teams, like, I think that may be
the most. So I see Denison as the most beatable one, but I see, to your point, that WNL and Pfeiffer might be the most crazy all matchup. Any of the matchups being going to one of the underdogs would be absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Of those matchups, perhaps the one that would have been more on the possible side is Pfeiffer over WNL.
Got it.
If like that's that. What you're getting at. That's the bone I'll throw you.
All right.
How about that?
I'll take that. I'll take that. Yeah, for me, I'm most excited about John Carroll Lake Forest here.
Yeah, Lake Forest is kind of our team.
I know. We've been, like, really hot on them. They've had a statistical player of the week and stuff like that. So they've been a lot of fun. But John Carroll is also, like, another team. We've seen, you know, a couple of their games this year.
They kind of play with a swagger to them.
Yeah, they got, like, this, about, like, energy way about them that they play.
I watched a bit of the OAC championship, Baldwin-Wallace game, to see if it was just incredible defense or if it was bad offense.
Yeah.
And it's pretty – it's John Carroll plays with some swag.
I like that. Like that a lot.
It's a fun game.
That's my kind of team. So I'll take that. And then, you know, winner there is going to be going to play Dickinson, which hot team right now. Everything's going right for him. But who knows? Who knows? That's why they go out and play the game.
That's why they play the game. They did see Dickinson saw Illinois Wesleyan early in the year and didn't, you know, have a great performance in that one.
Nope.
And perhaps John Carroll and Lake Forest can take a page out of Illinois Wesleyan's book and sneak up and give them a little bit of a run.
Do a little bit of the same. I'd love that.
Yeah.
So now it's time, Dan, for our second ad, the Panera Pick 2.
Ooh.
Go to Panera, one of my least favorite spots. Get a soup, get a salad, get a pizza.
And watch some D3.
And watch some D3 lacrosse. Yeah, they have pizza now.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's probably the only thing I'd order from there.
Flatbread, probably.
Yeah, it is flatbread. Supposed to be like healthy for you or something. Yeah. Get out of here. Yes. Our Panera Pick 2, sponsored by Panera. Dan, if you had to pick one round of 32 and then one Sweet 16 game.
Oh, man. All right. My round of 32. All right. This would be kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe we haven't done a bet of the week in a while. This should be our bet of the week.
Okay.
I think you'll be into this one.
All right. Tell me the names first, and then I'll tell you.
Swarthmore and Grove City.
Oh, yes. In.
I think I convince you to take Grove City, and while I take Swarthmore at a pretty high spread.
What's the points you're giving me here?
6.5.
I'm taking it.
Boom.
I'm taking it.
I knew you would.
Yep.
Yes. All right, yeah, so I'm on Swarthmore 6.5.
Okay.
I'll take that.
Grove City plus 6.5 all day.
I need
riding with my Wolverines.
Yes.
Yes. Love it.
All right, that's cool. I can rock with Swarthmore.
Yep.
They're not like, I'm not drooling over them.
Of course.
Yeah. But I think they'll end up
on the right side of history there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a tight one, but.
No.
I think it might be.
Okay.
I think it might be.
I mean, maybe.
Grove City can come
maybe,
to play.
Maybe.
Grove City's got some ballers down there.
Yeah.
Or up there from where we're located. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun one regardless. And you never know with the Wolverines.
6.5, we said, right?
6.5. Yep.
All right. So that'll be my round of 32.
Okay.
And then my round of 16. You do your 32 first.
Okay. I'll do my 32. So I think the Scranton-Gettysburg game is going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. I also had Swarthmore-Grove City as being another one to watch. Definitely keep your eye on. But the correct answer,
I think,
Dan,
it's a fun matchup.
Oh.
And it's like definitely part of what's cool about the tournament is you get thrown a bunch of weird scenarios, weird matchups, like
teams that would never play each other.
And I feel like Swarthmore and
Grove City is one of those.
Not necessarily, because geography, like, it could make sense that they would end up playing each other at some point, or like deciding that they like to schedule each other or whatever.
Especially after this, now that they play.
But I can't imagine it's happened before.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think so. But Dan, the correct answer to this question is Williams Babson round one. That's going to be, yeah, round of 32. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Round
of 32.
I thought you were saying round one. I don't know why I assumed it, but it's a rematch. It's Williams Babson round two.
Round two, Williams Babson.
Round one of round two.
Yes, round two of the tournament. Round two. Round two is going to be in round one of the tournament.
Yes.
But that's going to be an electric one. You know, Babson coming off the championship, and, you know, Williams being the fourth team in the NESCAC, sneaking into the tournament, seven losses, but they've played some teams real well this year. I think they're a dangerous, dangerous team, and this is going to be a lot of fun to see. Chi-Chi Price is going to be the determining factor in this game, though.
That's your guy.
Mainly because his name is so sick.
That's your guy.
Yes.
All right. Round of 16.
16, the big 1-6. It's a good one.
Sheesh.
Don't take mine.
I won't. Okay. I think yours is the best possible answer, though. But I'll go Gettysburg CNU.
Oh. If they make it out of Swarthmore. Or, excuse me, Scranton.
Yeah, maybe I won't say that one. all right. I'm going to do York.
Okay.
All right, well, I will take I'll leave you the good your thought there. And I will say I'm not taking this one, but I will say that I think the winner of Lynchburg St. John Fisher versus Denison will be very entertaining, assuming that Denison beats the winner of Illinois Wesleyan and Aurora. Yes. But I do find that I think that game will be an entertaining one. I think that one will be exciting.
Okay, yeah. That's a pretty good one.
But I'm not taking that one.
Oh.
Ultimately, I'm taking Tufts versus the winner of the Spartans and the Cavaliers. And so I am going to take York to beat Cabrini at Tufts.
Okay.
And then Tufts-York makes a very intriguing – I mean, that's a top 10 game.
100%.
As a Sweet 16 matchup.
Yep.
So I think that makes a very entertaining game for a Sweet 16 round. And we've seen this matchup before, and it actually was not that entertaining, to be quite honest. I saw it in person as I watched the my Spartans dismantled. Mm. But I think potentially that experience, and some of those guys were pretty young on that team. Now they're back. They're older. You know, like, perhaps that experience helps. You know, perhaps we get, you know, a game out of that. That hopefully, I mean, I was very excited about Tufts Middlebury. I was very excited about Tufts St. John Fisher last year. And both of those games in two instances have not been very good. So perhaps me being excited about Tufts York is not a great omen.
Not a good omen.
But my instinct is my instinct, and I will follow that to my grave.
I think you have to. The York fan in me wanted to take that one, but just the D3 Lax fan in me had to go Amherst-Salisbury. That is also like a marquee top 10 matchup.
And just to hammer home my point from earlier, like, I just, for the life of me, don't understand how Salisbury and Tufts are going to end up dealing with, but either York and Cabrini or Amherst and, I mean, hey. If I'm Geneseo, I'm talking right now about how everybody and their brother is just assuming that Amherst is going to beat them.
Yeah.
Like,
they're a hot team.
Hey. But that Salisbury-Amherst game, assuming that it happens, is like, it's such a good game for the Sweet 16.
It's got meanwhile, so much potential.
Meanwhile, you have, like, other matchups that just don't pack the same caliber.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Not to say
that. And those are the two best teams in the, like, the two teams involved in the as favorites are
insane.
Did not get many, did not get totally super rewarded for their body of work.
Next year, if you're playing, do you try to get the 3 seed? Try to get the RIT route? Try to get the 4th seed or the Gettysburg CNU route?
Gosh, man, I don't know.
Might be worth thinking about, but man, what a bracket! What a breakdown there. I think we hit on so much of it. It's going to be an electric tournament. I cannot wait for this to start. This is what we've been building up for, and it's finally here. It's finally here.
Yeah, man, this is exciting stuff. 38 teams, like we said, win or go home. You either rise to the occasion or you cry to your mama.
And a lot of people will be going home crying.
Rise or cry? Should that be the
episode title?
Yeah.
Rise or cry.
I like it.
Love it.
All right. Well, what else do we have here? Anything left on the outline?
I think we pretty much hit everything. You know, I don't really have any big takes. I think, you know, I got a lot of them out during our bracket talk and things like that. I'm pumped to see this bracket play out. They did an awesome job picking it, setting up the slate, building up the hype, and now's the time to go. Let's do it.
Boom. Super well said. I will leave on one more complaint about how I hate the mileage aspect of the bracket, and it makes for all of this like uneven just lack of balance. But I'm not a complainer. I'm a lover and a liver and a fighter. So if that means we get sent back on our shields, so be it. And in the meantime, I will just freaking cover to the best of my ability, watch every game, and do my very best to make being a D3 lacrosse fan as fun and as easy as possible.
Love that. Boom. So well said.
Teams are ready to run through brick walls for their boys. Your boys here are ready to run through brick walls for the boys.
Mm.
How about that?
Love that.
How about that?
Head down, shoulder in, run.
We sleep in June. Peace and love.
Love. Drop that low.